You're listening to a Comics XF podcast.
Matt Lazowitz, and welcome to this week's episode of Bat Chat with Matt and Will, a Batman ranking podcast, where each week, my co-host Will Nevin and I dig into three Batman stories, discuss them, and rank them on the big board, thus creating a giant list of Batman stories from best to worst. Will, how you doing tonight?
Yay, I'm doing pretty good. Matt, are you a pinball fan? You pinhead?
I have been known to enjoy some pinball. I wouldn't call myself a fan in that I'm not a person who, you know, goes out and seeks out an arcade. But when there is one, I will enjoy it.
Let me tell you. So last year, you know, we've been building this little home arcade, and there is like an entry level home virtual pinball that you can buy off the shelf from Arcade 1-Up, like most of the rest of the stuff we have. It is such a gateway drug, man, because I got that little mini virtual pinball. And I was like, oh, I could hack this and get like another 30 or 40 tables. Oh, shit. I could buy something that has 650 pinball tables. Oh, shit. So what I have done, the only pinball table I have truly ever loved, the Star Trek The Next Generation, circa season 6, when the Borg is that weird geometrical ship. And it's a big physical feature of the table. But anyway, I got this virtual pinball table, 648 tables, Star Trek The Next Generation vinyl skin. And oh my God, it has been so much fun. It's the only thing I can think about doing. It's got a great Batman 66 table. So many like fun built-in like video clips, and every pinball game from history that you can imagine is on there. And of course, right, all of these are, you know, fan made. Some like native digital tables that are questionably legal, but most of them are lovingly recreated physical tables. And then some people just put things together, and right, varying degrees of quality. There's a very, very fun Futurama table out there, absolutely fan-made, but I am so excited for spring break. All I'm going to do is I'm going to sit around my house in my underpants and play pinball. That's my goal for next week. I'm excited.
Sounds like a very pleasant way to spend spring break.
Yes, sir. This week, however, wasn't so pleasant.
No, it wasn't. And we have someone to thank for that. Let's welcome back Patreon supporter and friend of the show, John Wickham. How you doing tonight, John?
My quest to shoot for the bottom of the list still goes on!
You're coming pretty close tonight, my friend. Oh, boy, are you ever. You know, we can have very good discussions about very bad comics. We have many a time before, and I'd wager we will have many a time in the future. Because, yeah. Oh, Doctor. Because tonight, John is bringing with him three more stories of the first meeting between Batman and Superman. Possibly the only story where there are more versions of it than Batman's first meeting with the Joker.
Yeah, there's like two Silver Age stories you haven't touched after tonight. There's Geoff Johns' Justice League, yep. Smallville.
Oh, yep, and Mark Waid just did one in World's Finest. Yeah, there
Sean
is
Gordon Murphy's threatening to do one.
No.
Oh, that's one's just not gonna be good. That I just. Oh God! I can't think about Murphy. I've got enough stuff to think about tonight that I don't want to think about. That adding that in is just asking for trouble. But let's start off somewhere a little less making me want to remove my eyes, and something that We'll just, we'll start the night off slow and roll forward. Our first story of the night is the origin of the Superman Batman team. This is World's Finest Comics number 94. The writer is Edmond Hamilton, with pencils by Dick Sprang, inks by Stan Kay. No colorist or letterer are credited, and it is edited by Jack Schiff. The cover date is June of 1958. Lex Luthor has escaped from prison again, and Batman and Robin head to Metropolis to aid Superman. But Superman has a new partner, Power Man, and wants no help from the dynamic duo. As Batman and Superman follow the Man of Steel, they remember the first time the three of them teamed up and wonder what has changed now.
This is the third first time.
Yes. And this is yet another of the stories from the Greatest Batman Stories Ever Told trade from 1989. My Read to Tatters, delightful, like the thing that exposed me to more Batman than just what was currently coming out. Yes, this is a very, very late gold, early Silver Age story.
And the best we got going for us tonight.
Absolutely.
Yes.
No arguments there.
Not a very complicated story, right? As most of these are,
Which
you
is a
know.
weird sentence to have with a robot duplicate.
There's a plot going on in town, and we got the meet up with Batman and Robin and Superman. And Superman has got this new buddy, Power Man. And Soup says, "Oh, I don't need you guys anymore. Stay away, stay away." Batman and Robin are kind of bummed out. So they kind of creep on Superman to figure out why they're not invited around anymore. And they're kind of bummed. It's real sweet.
And we flash back to this new first meeting between the three of them involving crooks with liquid kryptonite and the uncanny ability to land a helicopter in a windmill on its rear rotor. Like they found some way to turn it 180 degrees and lower it directly in. I don't know how that works.
Matt, any experienced helicopter pilot can do
Good to know. I guess that's why I'm not an experienced helicopter pilot. Just like
that.
how any plane driver can take a man and throw him underneath a waterfall to give him a shower.
Yes. Yeah, like liquid kryptonite. I wonder, I guess it's just a suspension of, kryptonite, like ground up kryptonite in water. Because I don't know if you could liquefy kryptonite. I wonder what the melting point is on kryptonite.
You can melt anything.
I mean, you can, but these are, thugs in suits and pencil mustaches. This isn't that those guys weren't Luthor. Luthor, I'd be like, sure, but he's just walking around with a big old bowling ball sized piece of kryptonite. And I wonder if this is the first time that Batman disguises himself as Superman. Because that is a pretty common Silver Age trope where anytime Clark needed someone to like, no, Lois, I'm not Superman. Look, Superman's over there. If he didn't have a convenient Superman robot, it was often Batman who would, disguise himself as Superman. I wonder if that was something they
And
heard.
meanwhile, Alfred would have to be Batman.
And then they would have to get Dick to be Alfred, and at what point does the cascade of disguises stop, and at what point does it turn into a comedy of manners? I would read that comic.
Ace would have to be Robin.
And then they'd have to, and you know what? Then it stops because Crypto the Superdog would just have to be Ace. And no, and then Streaky the Supercat is Crypto the Superdog. Oh, and
And
now
then
I'm crossing.
Supergirl would be the cat because, and it would work because in the Silver Age, no one knew who Supergirl was.
Yep, except for
For a
Comet the
bit.
Super Horse, who would have to be Supergirl. Yeah, that is something I'm grateful we never have to talk about beyond making jokes about Comet the Super Horse being in love with Supergirl. I don't have to try to explicate that. I can just be like, hey, this horse used to be a dude and now he's in love with her, and we're good. Oh, the Silver Age was a wild fucking time.
You say that, but I'm trying to think if there's a Super Pets comic that involves Comet.
As we said, this retcons out Superman 76, the earliest version of this we did, which is funny because it's doesn't necessarily need to have. This could have just been like, yes, Robin, I know Superman, and this is the first time you're meeting him. But it seemed like, nah, we just need to pretend that didn't happen. And that's, I mean, that was the rule of the day. Because this, as I said, was 58, and Superman 76.
98. Oh, sorry, was 52?
Yes, so that's exactly the philosophy of the time amongst the editorial staff and thought was that the audience turns over every 5 years. So that was why you'd get reprints at those sort of iterative periods and why you could tell a new first time Batman met Superman and you weren't expecting anybody to remember the last time because the audience has since theoretically cycled through.
That makes sense.
Now,
okay, but tell me why 10 issues beforehand there was another Superman.
Right. Was that the young Bruce meets Superboy one?
That was one where Bruce used detective skills to figure out who Superboy was as a child, I think.
Yeah,
and
that was...
modern day, a criminal was blackmailing him, saying he knew Superman's identity. That's a story for another day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we'll talk about that in the next story, because there's something in the next story involving a young Clark Kent and a young Bruce Wayne that's like, wait, I've read this before in a different comic, but we'll get there.
It's just a fun story.
Yeah.
Batman's more active than he usually is in these origins, because he's the one who decides, hey, I should meet Superman instead of the other way around, or Luthor and Joker forcing it.
And the design on Power Man, it's a decent looking costume. It's one of these things where, you know, I guess they were just sort of throwing him at the wall and being like, hey, let's create this crazy costume. It's the same way that Batman for one issue used the identity of Starman, forgetting that there was already a Starman, and that many years later became the Starman of 1952 during James Robinson's Starman run that had nothing to do with Batman because of retcons. But that was one of the joys of Silver Age stories, is that they would come up with crazy costumes and crazy characters and just be like, yeah, we're going to just throw it in there for one issue. We're not going to, say, try to create a new girlfriend for the Joker, who's going to be the hot new thing, and we're going to make sure you know that this character is going to be the hot new thing, because we're going to try to make Hoochie happen.
Punchline is going to be in every story. And when she's not on the page, people are going to be asking, where's Punchline?
Like, you know, all good Silver Age stories, I read this in the tone of Dietrich Bader's Batman.
Absolutely. This Raven the Bold found the way to capture the tone of these kind of stories just perfectly. And it's fun to see, to remember that there was a period where Batman was allowed to be like, boy, I miss my friend. Why did my friend hurt my feelings?
Yeah.
Versus other versions where it's like, no, he's not my friend. Now I'm going to go and sit in the cave and brood for 2 weeks.
Why work you... alone?
Except for Robin and Robin and Robin and Robin. Batgirl, Batgirl, Batgirl. All right, Batwoman, Ace.
But I work alone.
Yeah. It's a sly comic, so
it
there's
is.
Not much to say about it.
Yeah, I mean, the art, I don't think this is our first Dick Sprang, but this is that period in the 50s where Batman is probably at his sort of lowest ebb, because we are really in the heart of like crazy sci-fi Batman in the 50s, because we're in 58. This is the year that the Silver Age technically begins. So I think I don't know if we are technically in the Silver Age. I said this was June of 58, and the Silver Age begins with, oh, wait, no, Silver Age begins in 56. For some reason, I always think Barry Allen's first appearance is 58. It is 56. So we are into the early Silver Age at this point, because 56 is the beginning of the Silver Age with the first appearance of Barry Allen in Showcase number 4, October of 1956. just one of those dates that I can never quite get right.
Yeah, it's a slight story. It's weird that Lex Luthor is in the story, but not in the flashback part of the story.
And is barely in the story to begin with. He's in about three panels, and boy, this thing wraps up fast. Like that last page does a lot of heavy lifting for the resolution of this story. And Batman and Robin have Silicon Shields, and they realize that Luthor has a Destructo Ray, and they get the kryptonite away, and Power Man tears off his clothes and turns out he's a robot underneath. End of story. You don't even get like a little panel of like Batman and Superman and Robin, you know, patting each other on the back. Like the last panel is literally robot tearing off its clothes to reveal it's a robot.
Either have Lex Luthor as the villain of the flashback or don't have Lex Luthor as the villain of the present.
Yeah, it seemed like you were just using Luthor because everybody knew who Luthor was, but he didn't do anything in the story. I also liked it in the end. He's like, he's testing his Destructo Ray, just randomly blasting warehouses into nothingness.
Well, yeah. I mean, what else are you going to do with your Destructo Ray?
Still not the worst Luthor we have tonight, though.
Well, I guess we carved the spin meat of the comic and got two more ones with a lot more meat to it.
Oh, do we ever? I think we are probably good on this front.
Well, that means it's time to World's Finest Comics number 94 on the big board.
We are at 384 stories on the big board.
God damn.
Number one is the post-crisis origin of Batman, Batman Year One.
Dale, at a sexy 69, it's JLA Prometheus.
At 200 is Enter the Outsiders, the first two issues of Batman and the Outsiders. At 300 is Last Chance, the issue of the animated series style Batman comic that has the entire origin of Deadman. And all the way at the bottom at 384, it's War Crimes.
Nominative Determinism strikes again.
This is, we're in Trifle Town.
Yeah.
Let's see, a Superman number 76. Okay, well, that's up at 165. This is not going to be that.
Oh, yeah, no. That's better than this one.
Yeah.
100%. Like, most people do not remember this particular origin.
No, I am befuddled. The only reason I think that this one made the greatest Batman stories ever told is because Superman 76 was in the greatest Superman stories ever told that came out the year before.
Also, this one's a short 12 pages, and this one does have Batman as an active participant. Exciting participant.
Yes. I will say... All right, so 338 is the other... is one of the other couple of World's Finest... I'm looking at other World's Finest stories we have. And right now we have two, and they are 338 and 348. 338 is the Clash of the Cape and Cowl, which has the Batman slapping Robin panel. And is that
it's a good weird, one?
It's the weird alternate universe where Batman has it out for Superman. And 348 is Superman's Secret Kingdom, where Superman takes over an indigenous tribe in South America and does a white savior. I think this is better than that.
It is better than that. Better than Spawn Batman at 341.
Does this go right below the Clash of the Cape and Cowl? Because Deface the Face is long and rambling and fairly pointless.
And Clash of Cape and Cowl has gotten Robin getting smacked in the face.
Yeah, I think we can just squeeze that. We'll just have two World's Finest back to back.
That's okay. It's our list, Matt. We can do that.
And eventually a Silver Age story will break them up.
Yeah. That is then two Edmund Hamilton stories back to back as well. Maybe we're just going to have a little Edmund Hamilton pocket there because I believe the other one is by someone. Yeah, it's Bill Finger. Man, can't win them all, Bill. All right. Our second story of the night is Crossworld. This is Batman Superman Volume 1, numbers 1 to 4. The writer is Greg Pak, with art by Jay Lee, Ben Oliver, and Yildiray Cinar. Colors by June Chung, Daniel Brown, Matt Yaki, and John Callis. Letters by Rob Lee, and edited by Eddie Berganza and Ricky Purdon. Cover dates are August to October and December of 2013. The Batman and Superman of the New 52 meet for the first time, but it's more than just them. A goddess of chaos has sent them to Earth 2, where the still antagonistic young heroes meet their older, more experienced counterparts, and they try to get to work together as a threat looms. Problematic creator watch, first of the night. Eddie Berganza, noted sexual harasser, not a good dude.
Big, big old asshole. First, two things I want to say. One, this is one of the uglier books that I think we've read, right? It's the art is competently made. I do not care for it in the very least.
Good, because I thought I was going to be the only one with that opinion on Jay Lee's art here.
I like Jay Lee in general. This was not the story for him to draw.
Yeah, no, this is like storybook. This is like fable. This is story tales. This is something else other than big action time superhero comics. I just didn't like it. Very depressing to look at.
Draws a bad Gotham.
Draws a bad Gotham. Draws a bad bat. Draws a bad bat plane. Just it, blech. Second, give me a primer on Earth 2. What the heck are we dealing with this story?
So, Chip, the Earth 2 of the New 52. So here's
that's a lot of bullshit in one phrase right there.
Yeah. So you go back to the earliest version, pre-crisis, all that. Earth 2 was the golden age Earth. That was the Earth of the Justice Society. Before the crisis, the Justice League and the Justice Society existed on different Earths. That's how you were able to have Huntress as the daughter of Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle, because they were the older Bruce and Selina of Earth 2 who had Huntress is their daughter. Then that remains even when the multiverse is recreated before the New 52. The New 52 comes in, and while, yes, that Earth seems to have started its heroic age earlier, it's just sort of generic, more utopian Earth until Darkseid shows up and just blasts the shit out of that Earth. Basically, the first arc of the New 52 Justice League is Justice League comes to Prime Earth.
Darkseid.
Oh, what'd I say?
Justice League.
Oh, Darkseid comes to the Prime Earth or Earth Zero or whatever they're calling it. The Justice League fend him off. Then he goes to Earth 2 and Batman and Superman have to sacrifice themselves to stop
and Darkseid. Wonder Woman.
And Wonder Woman, yes.
The big picture of Earth 2 was what happens to an Earth without the Trinity.
Yeah. And
until the Trinity comes back with the form of Thomas Wayne Batman. No, I will not explain further on that. That's going to be a job for you guys later on.
We'll get there someday. And Lord and Val Zod. This is basically slightly happier Earth. And this story is taking place before all of these events that we already know are destined to happen. So a lot of this is, you know, if you've been following the New 52, you know that Darkseid is going to wipe them out when he shows up. But it is quite confusing if you have zero context for any of them.
And you specifically told me that I didn't have to read the Darkseid issue that's collected in this trade.
No, you did not.
Oh.
I read enough bullshit for tonight.
Because it has minimal, it has no Batman, it has no Superman. It is just this really dumb new 52 origin for Darkseid that I do not like it.
It does feature the villain of the piece, KO, and the tradition of almost all non-Jack Kirby Fourth World creations. She blows.
Oh, yeah. She is the most generic, I'm chaotic character with no real motivation beyond basic self-preservation, which is still not explained and not good. But we haven't even talked about Batman and Superman in this, and oh, Doctor.
Both assholes.
Yes. It's one of these things where I want to start discussing it now, but it's even more evident in the next story about what happens when you untether Superman from humanity. Because that's how many times in this story, and I mean, it's even more in the next, but still, does Superman think about how, you know, how easy it would be to crush Batman or these humans or whatever over and over again?
Yeah, they're both assholes, and it's a very confusing story for a lot of it.
Yeah, and because you get them, and there's this Wayne Tech executive who has, are they cyborgs? Are they robots? I guess they're robots with like horrible, scary looking monster skin on them.
That's super villain shit, Bruce. I don't know why you approved it.
And he did. He's like, oh, wait, this is, he wasn't supposed to bring this out of the lab. When a dude is building those things, guess what? He's bringing them out of the lab.
Yeah.
That first sequence in Gotham, before we get anything else, do not dress Bruce in the Batman Year One outfit because you're just going to remind us about Batman Year One. You're just going to remind us about a better story.
We'll get there.
Also, a story that in the New 52 would be erased in literally the next month after the story ends.
Yep.
As it's going on, actually, because Villain Month interrupts issue three.
That's true.
It's T-shirt and jean Superman.
What do the Superman people think of T-shirt and jeans Superman? Because it's profoundly weird to me. I like the idea that we are going all the way back to the beginning of Superman. And I thought it was real cute how he couldn't fly. He could only jump. That's again, it's cute. But the costume is a weird choice.
The two Superman titles at this point, Action was Morrison telling New 52 Superman Year One, while Superman was set in the present, so 5 years later, where he's wearing the typical New 52 sort of armored look. Superman fans were more annoyed by the armor than the t-shirt and jeans because he's Superman. Why does he need armor?
Because
Also,
it
the
looks
t-shirt.
badass.
Also, the t-shirt and jeans was written by Grant Morrison, while Superman was written by a variety of authors until it landed on Scott Lobdell to take it over for 2 years.
Yeah. But I mean, we get to the point where Batman, where, you know, T-shirt and jeans Superman meets Batman in the penthouse of this Wayne exec where Catwoman is, but Catwoman viciously attacking everyone and for no real reason. We don't know exactly why
She was
she
possessed
was
by KO.
possessed. Well, right,
Yeah.
but rephrase, we don't know why KO is attacking the Wayne
Okay.
people. That's what I, yeah, she's possessed, but we don't know what the reason that KO has to just go and be killing people. It just doesn't, I guess it's to lure out Batman and Superman, but there seem to be easier ways to do that than just arbitrarily killing Wayne Enterprises executives. It also has one of my favorite things that I've read in a long time where it falls into one of my favorite categories of you don't know how these things work.
Oh no.
Because when Mangubat, the Wayne executive, grabs his daughter and starts running away with her, Clark, who's listening, says that her heartbeat is beating 200 beats a second. If your heart is beating 200 beats a second,
you did.
Yeah, your heart literally will explode in moments. 200 beats a minute is bad. 200 beats a second, you're a hummingbird. You're probably more than a hummingbird.
You're a better writer than that.
Yeah. Burn. And that's the thing. I like a lot of Greg Pak's work. I don't know what was going on with this story.
The series in general is just rough until like there's maybe one good arc in there in the entire 27 issues he writes.
Yeah, I was looking at the other arcs and I was like, okay, and it's like, she comes back, doesn't she? Yeah, she comes back towards the end of, or like the latter middle of this before we
she
get.
She comes back in a crossover with World's Finest.
Yes. Because she's back, because then we exit that and it becomes depowered Superman and Gordon Batman for the last couple of arcs.
Mm.
Yeah. That was a
and Tom Taylor does the three-parter and then bookends with Superman dying.
And by the way, when Superman is fighting with Batman, he's calling him a freak and he's thinking that he's some sort of bat creature. I'm like, you're Superman. You can tell he's just a dude in a suit. Why are you fighting with him like he is some kind of monster?
Because they're both dicks.
Yeah. And the only thing that gets Superman to, you know, stand down is when Martha Kent is like, you're my boy. That is a sweet moment. That is one of the few moments in this that I actually like, that this is the Superman who lost his parents. And it is Ma Kent who gets him to actually settle down. And again, that shows the import of the Kents and the import of Superman remaining in touch with his humanity. If Pak spent more time focusing on that, it would make a much more interesting story. But instead, they all wander off and spend 2.5 issues just bickering.
Oh, and the part that's not bickering, we get this whole fucking contrived thing about this one time the Waynes broke down in Smallville and young Bruce got to meet young Clark.
And that is stolen from the Superman Batman secret files, where it is a 3-page story. It's Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. It's beautiful. Where Bruce and Alfred, shortly after his parents' death, are driving cross country. The car does break down, but in this version, Bruce doesn't get out of the car. He just sits there and then they leave. And that's it. And so this takes that little 3-page story that's melancholy about, you know, what would have happened if he had gotten out and what if, and it builds it in this whole elaborate thing where Bruce is already the world's greatest detective at the age of 8 in figuring out Clark's secret.
And that was the high point of the book for me.
Yeah. Because,
like, at least it had pretty good art from, sorry,
Yildiray Senar.
It was like, I liked these two together more than our Superman and Batman right now.
Oh, definitely.
If you're going to steal from the best.
Touché. There's one moment that I really enjoy when Batman 2, I have them in my notes as Bruce and Batman 2 to differentiate. When he is teleported, when Batman 2 is teleported back to the Batcave and he finds Bruce with Selina, who's Batman 2's wife, tied up. Batman 2 dives at him and starts fighting, and Selina's just like, I had already gotten out of it. I was playing him to get him to tell me what was going on. Why are you doing this? That is a perfect Catwoman beat. That is a great Catwoman moment right there.
I thought on Earth 2, Batman was married to Huntress.
Huntress is their daughter.
Ah,
Huntress, yes. Okay. Is Helena Wayne.
You pictured a little more incest there.
To each his own, friend.
A little old boy. I also could not get over. There's the moment where, to prove that both Batman are the real Batman, they ask the story that they had Thomas Wayne read to them at the age of five. It's Ray Bradbury's The Veldt. Either of you familiar with that story?
Nope.
Nope.
Whoa, boy. It's a Twilight Zone-y type thing where it's set in a future where families have like holodeck rooms, basically. And it's parents and their two kids. And the two kids don't want to leave this room that gives them anything. And eventually they become kind of obsessed with the African Veldt as the one setting. They bring them to a shrink, and the shrink says you need to wean them off the room. And the kids just ask to go in there one more time. And they go in, and the parents are outside as well. They hear the sounds of screaming in there. The parents go into the room to see what's going on. The kids slip out, lock the door, and let the parents get eaten by holodeck lions so they can not have to leave their fantasy realm. This is the story
Nice.
a 5-year-old Bruce had his father read him over and over again. It's
Nice.
also two different worlds. They could be different stories.
True. I wonder which one of them was reading that version. And then we have the mystic crystal that grants wishes, and Deathstroke firing a Superman killing gun.
Earth 2 Deathstroke.
Earth 2 Deathstroke, yes. And the whole thing is basically, as it turns out, is this Kaio, however it's pronounced, wanting to figure out which world is the one that will be better at defeating Darkseid as she's running scared from him. And she basically settles on the New 52 Earth because their Batman and Superman are assholes.
Which is the wild thing.
It's all the worst aspects of the New 52. We've said it about other New 52 stories, but it's the same thing. It's intentionally, obnoxiously edgy. The characters are unlikable. It's not good.
The story ends with the whole meeting forgotten, erased. And Kao just possesses a small boy who was being bullied earlier. And Bruce and Clark watch on at the end, not knowing that Kao possessed the child, just saying, good on that child for punching his bully.
I mean, I'm all for a kid punching his bully. Don't get me wrong. I'm two thumbs up on that, but I'd rather the child was not possessed by a chaos demon from Apocalypse.
You heard it here first. Matt Lazowicz supports child-on-child violence.
Child-on-bully violence is acceptable. It's the same way you're allowed to punch a Nazi, you're allowed to punch a bully.
Punch all the Nazis, especially the Nazis who are bullies.
Yes. I think actually that's almost a redundancy. Nazi and bully, they kind of go hand in hand.
Well, you could be a Nazi without being a bully, conceivably.
Maybe. I think you're more likely to be a bully and not a Nazi than a Nazi and not a bully.
That's true. That's true. It's an interesting Venn diagram.
The parts that don't cross over are very slim.
Yes. Mostly Schindler's List.
Yeah. I sold shells to the Nazis, but mine worked, damn it.
Ha.
Oh, Mr. Burns. Okay, so here's my question. Thematically, what is this story about? I don't think this story is about anything. It seems to want to be about something.
It's about selling the idea of Batman and Superman's first meeting in an easily digestible trade for a body. And also a dark side story with Brett brief art attached to it.
Yeah, that would have been one more problematic creator we did not need.
Brett Booth does take control of the next arc in the story.
Oh God, yes, he does. It's War World, isn't it?
It's a Mongol arc.
Yeah, it's a Mongol arc. Oh boy. Yeah, that's for another time. And I think we're good because we're gonna have just so much to talk about with the next story.
Oh,
We talked about the highs of this story, which
it has at least something in it that is not wretched. The next one, it cannot be said.
All right, that creeping dread means it's time for Batman Superman number 1 through 4 crossword on the big
All right, so we already said the origin of the Superman Batman team is the highlight, is the best of the night. So we're not going higher than 339. So
board. Where's Nightwing Zero on the list?
That is
322. So a little above where that last one did, because it is the least offensive of those origins, and it's short. It's only one store, one issue.
That's why I threw it out there.
I would probably put this above War Games at 355.
Yes. 351 is either problematic or just plain bad. There's nothing problematic here. It's better than Pushback, the one above War Games. That Hush sequel from Gotham Knights. And it is so much less offensive than Night Quest the Search, and considerably shorter than Night Quest the Search.
Is Man of Steel number 3 in this range?
I think that might be a little lower.
That's 365.
65.
Okay. This one has good Clark moments.
It does. And I really like that one little Catwoman moment.
You want to say 350?
Oh, I think that seems a fair spot. 350, yes.
Oh boy.
And now we get to the latter day Frank Miller portion of the evening.
Yes, we are ending tonight with Superman Year One, number 3. The writer is Frank Miller, with pencils by John Romita Jr., inks by Danny Meakey, colors by Alex Sinclair, letters by John Workman, and edited by Mark Doyle and Arianna Turturro. The cover date is December of 2019. Superman arrives in Metropolis and begins his crusade to make the world a better place, but his first encounter with Lex Luthor leads to other firsts, including his first meeting with another hero, Batman. Problematic Creator Watch, Frank Miller, noted Islamophobe, which doesn't come up in this part of the story.
Oh, this is chapters Islamophobic.
This is by far the least offensive chapter of this book.
Oh,
Do you
God.
want to let the people know what we're not ranking tonight from Superman Year One?
Yeah, so issue one, I started reading it and I tapped out when a group of bullies attempt to sexually assault a 14-year-old Lana Lang.
Which means she got past baby Superman mind controlling his parents.
Oh yeah, Superman apparently has, you know, that the toxoplasmosis, that virus or whatever it is that cats have in their feces that make people love cats. Baby Superman had that as like an ability. Like
Nice.
he made Pa Kent love him. And he still seems to have it like throughout the story. Like he's meeting kids at school and he thinks that, you know, thinks something, and the one kid like repeats it right after. I don't know if it's conscious, but he definitely has mind control powers. And then in part two, he joins the Navy. Wait, Superman? You know, doesn't want to kill anybody? Superman joins the armed forces. And of course, winds up getting drummed out when he won't use his gun to kill a group of stereotypical Islamic terrorists before he becomes king of
Great.
Atlantis.
By fighting the former king of Atlantis who wanted to have incest sex with his daughter Lori Lamas. So that's what we're not ranking tonight.
I like how Miller certainly concluded this last issue pining for a sequel, pining for a follow-up, and I get that DC wants nothing to do with it.
Not gonna happen. The sales numbers weren't there. This thing did not do terribly well. This was one of
And
the
why would it? This is shit.
This was one of the first black label. This was the first non-Batman black label book.
It was Bat Penis, and then it was Frank Miller Year One.
Yeah.
Which, it's like, what an incredible way to start your new line.
Oh. We start out in a level of dumb. Miller does not get Superman.
Nope, not at all.
There's a fairly famous speech in Quentin Tarantino's Kill Bill Volume 2, where Bill is talking to Beatrix Kiddo. He puts forth a philosophy that matches what Miller has here, that Clark Kent is the mask that Superman wears. If you're writing that, this is what you get.
And also, totally antithetical to the other two issues that preceded it. Clark is a person there.
The whole thing, and I pretty firmly believe this, is that Clark Kent is the real person. He is a good guy from Kansas. He was raised by Ma and Pa Kent. He has no memory of Krypton. Krypton is just the place where he was born. It's not the place where he grew up. Jor-El and Lara are his birth parents, but he is the son of Jonathan and Martha Kent. And here, again, in this story, repeatedly, he's thinking about how everyone around him is fragile and he could shatter them. There's a whole bit of narration where he talks about how weak and sad and pathetic humans are.
Hold up, hold up. You're not doing the narration right. You gotta say, he's weak, he's weak, he's weak several times in order to get it
Oh,
effectively.
yes. Because
So much
repetition.
narration in this book.
So much repetition, repetition.
And Batman doesn't shut up over and over. In that the fight with him and Superman, Batman just keeps talking. It flashes back or calls back to, again, that first issue where he's dealing with bullies, calling out how Batman's talking to him, bully language. It's like, Batman doesn't do that. Batman doesn't talk. Batman just silently beats the shit out of you.
This thing is just paced so poorly, right? We got 60 something pages. Batman does not show up until about page 45. We have no real explanation for why they're fighting. They fight for a couple of pages until Wonder Woman shows up. And then they're like, all right, we are the Trinity now. Let's go get this Lex Luthor character. They get Lex, and then Lex is like, aha, but wait. There's what is it? The place, the thing.
Not a city of Kandor.
Kandor, there we go. I was like, Kandahar? No, that's not right.
No, we don't want Frank Miller writing anything set in Kandahar.
Soups is like, okay, I am needed in this other place I've never been to. I will see you later. It's paced as if the person writing the story has no idea how to tell a story, right? It is the sign of someone who is past their prime as a creator. And it's frustrating. It's sad is the wrong word, but Year One is a brand for one thing, but two, it's a really good story that speaks to the core of Batman as a character. This is just an irredeemable mess. What a bummer.
I don't know why you wait until part three for Superman to be Superman and not Aquaman.
It's got that Smallville vibe where it's like, you're not supposed to, he's not supposed to be Superman. And it's called Superman Year One. If you call it something else, that's one thing, but it's about him being Superman. Batman Year One doesn't tell the story of Bruce's training. It starts with him arriving in Gotham. And even there, he might not be Batman until the end of part one, but he's a proto-Batman doing Batman things before that. Issue one is just Clark in Smallville.
And issue two is Clark doing his best Namor cosplay.
It's John Carter of Mars, only in Atlantis with Superman. And let's also, the complete ill use of both Luthor and the Joker in a two-page scene that is there just because Miller felt like having his interpretation of the Joker show up again and flirt with Lex Luthor for a page and a half.
And then Batman does a torture.
Which is just not right. It's not necessarily that Bruce won't, use pain, but Joker's willing to tell him everything, and then he just is like, no, I'm gonna beat on you because I feel like it. But we're early enough in Batman's evolution and his contacts with the Joker that it's not like we're at a point where he's developed the pathological hatred of the Joker that he so rightly has later on. And how many times does Batman hold a gun in this story?
Jeez.
At least 3 times.
Yep. Batman doesn't use guns. Batman doesn't use guns.
Batman, on an angry occasion, might blow up a tanker all willy-nilly, but he wouldn't use guns to evacuate it before he blows it up.
I don't entirely know what Miller is trying to do with Luthor here. Is it supposed to be Trumpian with this sort of.
Oh,
God damn
so
it, that is exactly what he's trying to do, isn't it?
who knows exactly what they are trying to say here? But one thing I specifically hated, and it's one of those things that you didn't even have to do, right? You could have just not. So there's one panel in the Daily Planet office, and they've got a framed like front page in the background, and it says, "Man bites dog, MSM, mainstream media blames Trump." And I'm like, that is one, not a fucking headline. And two, why? Why did you even do that? And just as a joke, because you can, just to be shitty, because you think that's somehow clever. I was astounded by the level of just idiocy.
Still better than the Daily Planet, a paper of record, the DC Universe's equivalent of the New York Times, when Superman first appears and they have a photo, the headline is a banner headline across the entire top of the paper, right below the masthead. That's just WTF question mark exclamation point. That's the Daily Bugle over in Marvel. That's
Exactly.
Jameson's paper. That's the equivalent of the New York Post. That is a tabloid rag. That is not the Daily Planet. And why is Perry White a complete asshole in this book? Perry White's gruff. He's, kind of a hard ass, but he's not calling, oh, you're the college boy snot, huh?
Oh, all of these characters are written with Frank Miller's voice. Every single one of them.
Yeah. Classic Frank Miller move of like saying Lois is the love of his life after 2 issues of falling for 2 other women. And then at the end, Superman goes off, does a kiss with Wonder Woman. We don't hear Lois's point of view after the fight.
Yeah, it made me think back, and I do not remember Dark Knight Strikes Again well enough to have an answer for this, and I really don't want to know, but it's okay. Lois is just out of the picture. Like, Lois never appears in Dark Knight Returns, and I don't remember if they ever address what happened to her, because by Strikes Again, he and Wonder Woman have a what?
Shitty daughter.
Yeah, like 17-year-old daughter. So, whatever happened to Lois? I dislike often when people say this kind of thing about professional work, but this absolutely reads like bad fanfic.
Yeah.
This is Miller just writing lousy iterations of these characters that he does not understand. Bruce is completely out of character. Clark is completely out of character. Lex is out of character. There's a moment where one of Luthor's subordinates comes in to tell him that Batman blew up his drug lab, and Lex punches the guy in the face and breaks his nose. Luthor is far too controlled for that. He doesn't break your nose there. You go home and the police are waiting and they have found 20 kilos of coke in your closet. Luthor doesn't break your nose. He ruins your life. Lex doesn't lose control like that. It was a really out of character moment.
Lex Luthor doesn't need advice from the Joker.
Yeah, they're not buddies. Whenever they team up, one betrays the other. That is completely their relationship. They don't meet in a, abandoned police car and Joker says, "Oh, you're making me wet." He gave up coding Joker's queerness. He just loves writing super queer Joker, which I don't know if that qualifies as homophobia, but it feels pretty close to it.
Yeah.
Also, bat the bat tech with the water power generators.
Yeah. I was like, wait, so he's created a device that will basically cure the energy crisis, but oh, I don't want to share the technology. Why would I share the technology that would save the world? I'll just create a revolutionary technology and use it. That is that terrible interpretation of Batman who does what he does just because he needs to get his rocks off beating on the poor. Ooh, this is a frustrating, frustrating comic.
Yeah. Thank you for nuts for just what I said. Let's do Superman Year One, Volume 3, and you didn't respond. Fuck you.
Hey, you're a Patreon backer. It fits the parameters of the show. It is a comic with Batman in it. And you specifically said number three. If you had said a whole series, I might have been like, no, we're only covering the one with Batman in it. But you
Ugh.
were specific that we only had to do this one.
And I am going to say, we won't limit this to anybody else, but you specifically cannot ask for strikes again.
Yes, everyone gets one Frank Miller.
Yeah.
One.
If you want to pay these boys to have them read Dark Knight Strikes Again, feel free to go on the Patreon. Is it how much for a story request?
$10.
Ten
10 bucks
bucks.
for three. You have to do it. $10 for 3 months.
And you can have these boys be sad about having to read Dark Knight Strikes Again.
Also, is there the art on this? There are absolutely moments that feels like Romita is trying to look like that latter day Frank Miller in places. A lot of it looks like Romita, but there are splash pages and moments with the even blockier than Romita's normal style, that there's a splash of Superman flying that's like, I wonder if Miller did some of these layouts because there's a vibe.
Well, they do share credits, right? It's story and art by Miller and Romita.
So there might have been some layouts in there. Oh boy.
From Romita Arts, the best he probably did for DC during his tenure there. Still not the best, but it's better than what he did with Brian Michael Bendis.
I don't think it's as good as Last Crusade. That's probably the best art that Romita did for DC. But the art here isn't bad. It's just there are points where it's like, that is very much a Miller layout.
Elevate the story from where it is.
It's very difficult to elevate this story.
There's no elevating. There's no getting this thing up. This thing's flaccid.
Yeah, and on that, I think that's the way to end the discussion of this one.
That dick joke means it's time. But Superman Year One, number three on the big board.
So,
How far down are you going? Bottom
Lightning
10?
Gyre is the
Oh,
ceiling.
yes.
That is just outside of the bottom 10.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so here's a question. We'll start here. 380, Dark Allegiances. Is this better than Bruce Wayne meets Hitler?
Yes, I think.
I think the fact that the art here is solid keeps it out of that bottom, because everything below, oh, I'd say
Okay, wait. Is this better than the annual where Superman and Batman meet on a cruise?
oh, that's yeah, okay, that's 377.
Is this gonna fall below the current bottom of Superman, Batman, team em ups.
Every character in here is not the version of that character that we anticipate. These are all written in a way that does not make sense. That one very specifically has Batman and Superman being goofs, and it's that Lois Lane scene where Lois makes a joke at the expense of Bruce's dates about their eating disorder and makes them run into the bathroom and start vomiting. That is just repugnant and so out of character for Lois Lane.
But remember, Batman has the solution to save the world's energy crisis, but keeps it off to himself.
And uses a gun repeatedly.
This is just such a poorly paced story. And I think, what was it last week? Feels like last week. Could have been a month ago. Who knows? Poison Tomorrow at 378. It had some really dumb moments, but at least it was a competently told story. Might not have made perfect sense at every point, but it got to those points in a progression that made sense. This goes to like A to B to Q to Z to double F, and then to just fuck you.
When Luthor first shows up, I thought there was a page missing. Like I went because I was reading the trade. And then I went, all right, let me go and look at the single issue to see if there's a page missing. And there isn't. It's just you don't see the dialogue. And Superman, like Luthor just walks out and Superman's immediately like, no, I won't do that. It's like, you don't see what Luthor says? I was like, is he a telepath? Because the narration is Luthor thinking about how he's gonna play Superman. Is he reading his mind? Or did we miss dialogue? Or is this just ugh.
Luthor is just muttering to himself, and Superman hears it. That's what happens.
All right, so if we're
So,
saying it's below Poison Tomorrow, but above Batman Meets Hitler, that's 378 and 380. So it's just the question.
I think I would put it probably above Red Hood and the Outlaw Zero. For all its warts, for all of this is just a bad thing, it is not teenage fucking and making Red Hood and everything else that went on in that book.
Oh, that last like 3 pages where it's like, oh, by the way, Joker just sort of was like, yeah, I wanted to make my own Robin so I could kill him, which is never explored. So yes, okay, so that makes it the new 379.
Next time I'll have funner ones, I think.
You know, I'll take fun. I like just wacky. That's dealable. I will take goofy and whatever over just pain.
I've chosen violence the last 3 times.
Yes, you have.
Because my first one was politics. My second one was, what was my second one?
Oh boy.
Suicide Squad.
Yes. Hey, there was a you got one in there though. That one, you got a top 100 book in that one. You got the Waller story, the first Batman Waller story. That's at number 90. That is a solid showing on that one.
The reason why I keep picking bad books is because my first submission off the air was the Alan Moore Swamp Thing story, and that's pretty high up there.
That
So
one too.
I like cracking the bottom now.
Well, John, thank you as ever for coming on the show and for your support. We absolutely appreciate it. Next week, it's been a while, so we're circling back to the runs we're reading in order with the next arcs of the Morrison Run, No Man's Land, and Injustice. We'd like to thank our Patreon backers, Dan Grote, Josh Wheel, Mrs. Abigail Hartbaum, Asimov Fangirl, Tony Thornley,
Go, Utes.
Sam Hopper, John Wickham.
Hey, pick better books next time. Hey,
Robert Secundus.
Bobby Two Bucks.
Tim Rooney, Giorgio Sereggioli, David Wheel, Alexander Wheel, Matt McThorne,
McThorny.
Dan Offer,
Barely knew her.
And Nate Rendell for their support. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at BatCatComics, and the show is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music /Audible, and at ComicsXF.com, where new episodes drop every Thursday. You can support the podcast on Patreon at patreon.com/BatChat with Matt and Will, where you can get shout-outs, bonus content, pick a story, and even come on the show.
Do you want to pimp out March's bonus episode?
Ah, yes. March's bonus episode will have been, as this is dropping the first week of April, the animated adaptation of Batman Under the Red Hood. We'll see if removing all of the tie-ins to every DC event of the past year helped that story along the way.
Can't make it any worse.
It could. If you believe, it can happen.
But fortunately, I do not believe it does. If you want to hear more of my ramblings, mostly about the three C's, comics, cinema, and cats, you can follow me on Twitter and Blue Sky at MattLaz1013.
And I'm at Will Nevin, and I'm never leaving Twitter, but I'm leaving this show. Good night, Huntsville.
And be sure to visit ComicsXF at ComicsXF.com or ComicsXF on Blue Sky for our weekly Friday Bat Chat roundup of new Bat books. For my other show, WMQ&A, where my longtime best friend Dan Grote and I interview comics creators, retailers, publishers, journalists, and other related tradespeople, as well as all the other stuff Will and I are writing. And stay safe out there, folks. Gotham is not a place to be after dark.